Welcome to Indie Radio Garden, this week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WHGELP 95.3, the Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. From the show Make Some Intelligent Noise, the host Rochelle Wilson interviews Tajay Whaley about gun street violence and its consequences for the community.
You're listening to Rochelle Wilson, Make Some Intelligent Noise, here at WHGE 95.3 FM. We are now broadcasting to you in Philadelphia as well as New Jersey and here in the state of Delaware. So to my Philadelphia and Jersey listening audience, I say welcome and thank you so much for having us on your show, because we are definitely collaborating through the ingenious and creativity of Mr. Harmon Carey and Pavel Urenga. We are now in a collaboration with 10 other radio stations in Philadelphia and New Jersey. There was a funeral yesterday at Congo's Funeral Home. A young 19-year-old boy was murdered, yet again, another murder of a young person, another young life gone, as a direct result of street violence. This young man was a up-and-coming rising new star on TikTok, Matima. And because of his associations and affiliations, nothing that he did personally, he was not involved in any extracurricular street activities. And yet, because of his association, someone took his life. That funeral was yesterday. And I spoke with some of the young people out there, but I brought one of them with me today. One of the most important young people in my life. I've known her since she was 15 years old. She is now a University of Delaware college student, and I'm so proud of her. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome my friend and my guest, Tajay Whaley, to the show. So you're on your way to the University of Delaware. You'll be going to college there, and you made it successfully through high school with honors, I must say. You stuck to it, and I'm so proud of you for doing that. But yesterday was a young person's funeral, someone that you knew, and I don't want you to get emotional, but at the same time, I think it's important to share with the audience that gun violence, street gun violence, has affected you personally in your family.
Right. I've lost a lot, more than enough people to gun violence. I feel like in my generation today, it's kind of popular. So for me, losing up to gun violence, it feels kind of selfish, but there's really nothing I can do about it.
You lost a family member, your twin brother, Teron Whaley. We love you, babe. We lost Teron Whaley to gun violence in the streets. And at that time, she was only 18, so he was only 18. So gun violence is something that Tajay is quite aware of and has affected her personally. Tajay, you and I were talking a little bit, and I just want you to share. I'm just going to give you the floor and let you just share your thoughts. My question is, where did we as adults go wrong? Where did we miss the mark? What can we do now to help young people stop shooting and killing each other?
I think that a lot of people think that you could just stop gun violence. Like, you can just say stop and then it just stops. You need to take more action than just telling us to stop, or take more action than just having even things like this, radio talking, even this, I don't feel is enough. There's even been like bigger conversations, like the governor can hold a conversation and tell us to stop gun violence. We can't do anything about it. I feel like when it comes down to street affiliations, Once you made your bed, you have to lay in it. You have to, if you want to leave out of the streets, you have to do it according to how it's done. It's not rules and regulations, but it's not just a, you come in and out however you please.
Like, you can't just quit the street life.
No, you don't just graduate from being a gangster. I feel like you can't just wake up one day and be like, okay, I want to be good today. I want to be a changed person. You can, but that's not typically how it works in my generation. I feel like in my age bracket, when we get angry, we turn to violence. And I feel like that has a lot to do with parenting. And it's not just parenting, it's who inspires us, it's what we're taught, it's what we see, what we're around, and in our community, we're around nothing but guns, fighting, smoking, things that aren't positive. So that's what we grow to know, that's what we grow to do, and that's what we grow to learn. I think parents could be parents, better parents. So like you can enforce curfews, you can enforce like who your child hang around. You're a parent for a reason. I don't think you and your child should be best friends, although having that kind of relationship is sometimes necessary personally, but you're a mother before a friend first.
Parents, it's all right to be friends with your kids as a second motivation, but your first motivation is that you are their parent. And one of the things that the young fella yesterday said to me, and I love the way he said it, it just kind of dovetails off of what Tajay is telling us today. Parents are afraid to be parents. They would rather smoke weed with their kids, and I'm not saying that I'm opposed to that, but there has to be some level of supervision. There has to be a parental guide. One of the things that Kwame said to me yesterday when I interviewed him at the Congo funeral home is that as a young person coming up, he was afraid to do anything wrong because he knew that the elders in the community were going to chastise him. He knew that he was going to be corrected. Where have we lost that as adults? At what point do we become parents? And parenting isn't just because you gave birth to them. Parenting is all of us. It takes a village to raise a child, but it takes the entire community. Just because I didn't give birth to you doesn't mean I don't have a right to parent you if I see you doing something that is inappropriate behavior. Speak up and say something. It's love. Doing that shows love. So we gotta love our babies by speaking up and saying, hey, I don't like your behavior and don't talk to me that way. But we're so afraid that they're going to curse us out or shoot us that we just, we turn our heads, a blind eye, and we walk away and let them get away with what they're doing. You said your generation, anger. Where is that anger coming from, and how can we help you to be not angry?
In my community personally, our anger came from beyond us. So there's older people, older than us, like even though we are 18 and older, there's older role models that some of us look up to, and they just aren't good role models. So a lot of things that those older people did resulted in a lot of feelings for us younger ones to have, because everything you do takes a toll on someone, whether it's a positive toll or a negative toll. Everything you do is looked at, everything you do is judged, and everything you do has a value, whether it's good or bad. So I feel like our anger came from the actions of everything that the older ones done, and it just passed it down. So as we continue to shoot, we continue to get more angry. It's just bloody tears.
You say that even if Governor Carney says stop shooting, it's not going to change. It has to start with us here in the community. So you tell me right now, today, I don't really have any children. The children that I would have in the teenage bracket are my grandchildren, and they're 2 hours away from me. So what can I do here in this community? Can I save a young person today?
We can start small. We can do things like, it doesn't sound really big, but it's increasing the rate I'm trying to help. We can do things like petition. We can take it to those who actually have the legal power to help us. Like, the law could do many things to help us. I just feel like they aren't noticing. Nobody's talking about it enough. So I feel like if we go to them and we tell them, how can we change this? How can we do this? They actually have a whole format of how we can do it and what we need and who we need and everything like that, I feel like they'll be willing to help. So like, we can go to them with ideas like extending the background checks, so that you can like go into more depth of knowing if you're able to, like, should I give you this gun or not? We can do things like age degree. I mean, 21 is actually considered adult legally, but I feel like your mind is still growing and prospering at the age of 21. I feel like maybe 25, you'll know whether you want to gun down someone or not and know the consequences, but you have to understand. So things like a class before buying a gun could also be helpful, even though it's not something everyone wants. It's no one wants gun violence either. So I feel like it's a lot we can do. It's just a lot of things they've overlooked also.
Okay, so what I hear you saying, and you can correct me if I didn't hear you correctly, raise the age limit for purchasing a gun to 25, because by then you have the maturity to know if you want to shoot something or not. So that's the law. But, you know, Todd, some of the guns that the young people are using to shoot, they didn't go in a gun store and buy it. They got it out of the back alley, the street.
And that's only because a young man, 21-year-old, went and got it for them or passed it down to someone who wasn't ready to have it. So that's why I feel like the age should be raised to 25. Because at 25, you know that you shouldn't give a 16-year-old a gun fully loaded.
Yes. Because if they don't shoot someone else, they don't even know how to hold them. They could shoot themselves.
Right. They can also do things like bumping their the amount of things that they had to sell, bumping their stock.
I'm not sure what that means, bumping their stock.
Like, they have 200 guns to sell today, bumping that to them.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay. So they're making money by selling these guns, and these are in the back alley. So what can we do to dissuade them from doing that? Is that where the police have to come in and arrest them for having these guns? Or can we tell them, if you turn in the guns to us, you know, to the police station, then we'll pay you for the guns?
But now you have to enforce things for it to be done. Like, for an example, in school, there's a rule where you have to be on class on time. Sometimes in school, there's a teacher who doesn't enforce the rule, which makes some students not listen. So she would allow some students to come to her class and then end up being late to class. It becomes a norm. So once another child sees that child doing it, it becomes something that everyone does. And once everyone does it, it's now no longer a rule that people follow because one teacher didn't enforce it. So I feel like you have to enforce the laws. They are there for a reason. You have to listen and you have to abide by them. That's what they're there for.
And I hear you saying consistency. I can't tell you on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to come to class on time and then Thursday and Friday let you come in late. Every day it is the same rule.
Yes.
Consistency, enforce the rules based on consistency. I love it. And see, we as adults, we think we have all the answers and we can solve all of these problems without asking the young people what are the solutions. Only the young people know what the solution to the problem is. So that's why I've invited Tajay today and young brother Kwame, which maybe he got lost or he couldn't find his way. I'm not sure what happened. One of the things that he did say yesterday when I asked him, what can we do as adults to be proactive? He said, more love. We need to love each other more. Like, and disciplining our children is a part of loving them. So being a former high school teacher, I don't know, I might have been inconsistent. There may have been on Fridays that I let folks just kind of run around. But I think from Monday through Thursday, I enforced the rules. But maybe on Friday, I wasn't so very consistent with the students. So now that's something that is in my brain that I know I need to do with young people. And if you're listening, and if you listen to her carefully, then you will find that the answers to what we need to do are in this interview. We don't need to go any further than right here. She's telling us what needs to be done. We need to be consistent. We need to enforce the rules. Dovetailing off of Kwame, we need to be parents. We need to create rules and enforce them and be consistent with them. For law, we need to up the age. How young should you be to get a gun? No, you need to be 25 because you're not even mentally developed. You're not even mature until you're about the age of 25. So that's a good time where you can fill out the application, take a class on guns, and then you could purchase one. As for the back alley guns that are being sold, and we know that they are, that's probably a police issue. where policing needs to get a little bit firmer, stricter, on the young people who are selling guns in the back alleys. Get the guns off the street, make an agreement, make a deal, do something, buy the guns, whatever you gotta do to keep these people from selling them to the 16, 17, 18, and 19 year old kids.
In our generation today, we have a lot of problems that a lot of us think that we have the solutions to, but don't really know. You have to find out, you have to ask questions, you have to pay attention, you have to love us, you have to work together. This is not a one man job or one person job. Even if you do like working alone better, this is a team that we need to create and relationships that we need to build. We need to spread the love. There's a lot of hate and envy in our generation, and it has to stop.
The second audio comes from WRGU-LP, 92.9 FM, Germantown, United CDC, from the show Neighborly Chats. David Juro interviews Brandon Ritter, manager of Growing Spaces at Food Moxie. They chat about their mission to promote locally grown produce and Brandon's personal journey with urban farming.
You're listening to Neighborly Chats on WRGU LP 92.9 FM. Today's episode is the second focusing on Food Moxie, an organization that educates and helps people to grow, prepare, and eat their own healthy food. I spoke with Brandon Ritter, the manager of Growing Spaces at Food Moxie, an urban gardener and a longtime resident of the Germantown area.
Hi, my name is Brandon Ritter. I am the Growing Spaces manager for Food Moxie. And basically, I've been here for about 4.5 years now, working to help people grow, cook, eat, and inspire them to do all those things in our growing spaces. And after they leave us, 1 in 4 individuals in Philadelphia is food impoverished or does not have the resources to grow and get what they need. So we're hoping to create that agency within this nonprofit as well.
I started by asking Brandon about his education at Saul High School, which is in the Roxborough neighborhood.
So Saul High School is one of the largest agricultural high schools in the nation, which is like amazing, right? Saul High School is providing a lot of different outcomes for students depending on where they want to specialize. They break it down into horticulture, animal science, culinary science, and there's one more. I know there's, I think it's natural science, which would, you know, different places to be in if you're a student there, but it's definitely one of the cheeries for the city of Philadelphia. There's a lot of people who I think want to go there, and there's a lot of people who get there and say, oh, this isn't for me. And so to have this opportunity here is just amazing. The funny thing is that oftentimes a lot of people like to speak about Saul High School as the start of my journey with urban agriculture, when actually it started way younger than that with my grandmother at the age of 6, just being able to go outside and work with her in the garden. And then at the age of 12, I really started to work a lot more with her in the community garden, but also working at a farm that exists as a local arboretum. Since I was already working on urban farms for summers, you know, before, it was kind of like a natural path, you know, that was already going down. Oftentimes at Saul High School, I knew what something was. I just wasn't able to put a name to it. But, you know, I flew by in plant science with all A's for the most part. So that was great. I think that the practices that the school district of Philadelphia is updating to start thinking about 21st century skills in relation to agriculture as a whole will benefit the next generation. When I was going to Saul High School, you were learning the 1950s concepts of how to butcher meat or how to apply some herbicide or pesticide out in the field to get rid of a weed or a pest or something, right? They're now thinking about field to farm to table aspect, you know, whereas 50 years ago, they're just learning how to like get it in, get it out type of things. That is something that Food Moxie, I feel like, has been able to help provide the support for the farm that is producing, you know, high quality vegetables there, and then the students who are there to gain high quality skills. And so we're that middle piece where we're connecting the two and providing the educational support that's necessary for the students to do well after they graduate high school.
Next, I asked Brandon how he ended up working for Food Moxie.
So Food Moxie, formerly known as Weaver's Way Community Programs, they had started doing programming at the local Arboretum, and then they transitioned over to Saul and MLK High School and Stanton Family Manor. And I had history with them since a child, you know, a young teenager. When I would often visit the farm, you would see the nonprofit arm in action. After high school, I went to work with the Phillies, worked with the local Arboretum, and worked with the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, City Harvest, basically. And then I left there, worked at the city of Trenton with a nonprofit that was doing similar work to City Harvest here in Philadelphia. And then got tired of that commute and was ready to move on up anyway and moved on over to Food Moxie. You know, it's coming full circle, coming back to where I started from.
Brandon also told me about the crops he helps to grow, as well as the feeling of farming and the sense of abundance that comes with the work.
We are growing collards and kale and cherry tomatoes and your heirloom tomatoes and eggplant, cucumbers, squash, watermelon, a long list of herbs and culinary herbs. I feel like if you were to walk on to the growing space, you would feel like you are in a place where resources were plentiful. And that is something that I am trying to recreate around this city, because there is an immense amount of empty, vacant land. And even with development pressures, we still have so much to capitalize on. So this is just like an example, a demo of what, you know, there is to offer.
Earlier on, you heard Brandon mention the term farm to table. I asked him to expand on the idea a bit more to give listeners an understanding of the ethos behind the phrase.
Going back only a generation for me, or two generations, farm to table was something that occurred every day, or else you didn't eat. And I don't know, mean like everyone was farming and everyone was growing all their food and everyone was, you know, what you harvested that day was what you ate that night. But there was some notion that if you didn't do this, you probably wouldn't eat that night. And so whatever this was, it was connecting you to the food that you were about to eat. And we have gotten away as a country, right, from capturing the important things like growing your own food or knowing your own farmer. And so as we move more and more away from that, we see a lot of people just be disconnected from preparing your food, growing your food. And so that's not a bad thing as much as it is just remembering that these things have to occur for us all to eat, right? So farm to table is really about providing access and agency for those individuals who fall into the 1 in 4 category, as I mentioned before, in Philadelphia, where they don't know where their next meal is coming from. That is why it's so important for us to highlight farm to table so that we can remember that someone has to do the work on the ground, literally in the field, right? We need to know who those people are and we need to thank them. We need to address them. And then for the people who aren't in that category, we need to be saying, hey, I see you over there growing food. What can I do to support that? Because a lot of people who grow food in the city of Philadelphia aren't always growing it just for themselves. This is something where they've taken a passion to gardening or farming or whatever it may be, and they're able to lend a hand to grow food for people who cannot easily access fresh and healthy vegetables. I know there are certain people who are never going to step foot outside to do anything with dirt, but I will say that once we identify that those people aren't interested in growing the food, we have to identify other spaces for those individuals to feel included in the process, or else we're doing a disservice to ourselves, because then we're just saying, well, you just grow the food, all the responsibility is on you. And that's kind of how we got where we are now. You know, if we're trying to create a new system, right, that works for everyone, we have to start thinking about how to involve those individuals who are not interested in growing food in a way, in a practice that includes everyone. And I think that at Food Moxie, we're starting to go down the right path in that manner, right? So an example is that we're working at Stinton Family Manor with individuals who are experiencing homelessness. In this case, they are allowed to have the agency to involve themselves as much as they feel their capacity is. Those people who aren't interested in growing the food may feel interested to cook with us. And so that's why we offer a cooking class where they're able to be involved in the system. So it's not like, you know, farming has to be like so like just one sentence. I think it's bigger than that. And I think that we are getting at that a little bit more each and every day that we are interacting with someone.
As I do with every guest, I asked Brandon what kind of impact he wants to have on the community around him with his work. And even though the answer might seem fairly obvious, he gave an interesting insight.
I don't want people to go to bed hungry. That's the biggest impact I want to have in the city of Philadelphia. We have so many individuals being overlooked every day. People going hungry every night is definitely going to cause problems for a lot of things. And also, we have to address that these are people and they are human. And that should not be happening in the United States of America. So I'm sorry, let me correct myself, or anywhere else for that matter. These are just really simple problems that should have been solved yesterday. I think that as a community, right, though, we have to work all together to be engaged on the food system inequalities that exist worldwide. Because what's happening in Philadelphia is happening across this planet. One of the things we could probably do here in America is to make things more simpler. They don't always have to be so complicated. I don't think I'm being overly optimistic, right, about what we can do either. I don't think that feeding people should be such a big, it shouldn't be like such a big problem. And I think that sometimes we often make it more complicated than it needs to be.
Finally, if you're interested in learning more about Food Moxie or supporting their mission in one way or another, you can listen to the following options.
Go to www.foodmoxie.org and you can go to Ways to Give. Under that, you'll see a litany of options. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so we obviously take donations, and those are all listed on how you can help support the mission if you have financial means to do so. If you can't, you can feel free to join me at one of the gardens. And if you can't give money, you can give some time. You can always go and reach out to us on our Instagram page, and we'll let you know when we are doing things and how you can get engaged. So if you just message us, we'll always respond, hopefully, to your message if we can catch. If we don't catch the first time, send it again. So we're also now, because of the pandemic, have started to work into our programming, if you will, away. I don't know if it's going to be here forever, but, you know, it's here for now. We're working to give away some food boxes, you know, that are local and supporting local farmers at MLK High School. So definitely check that out if you're in the area.
I'd like to thank Brendan Ritter and Food Moxie for the work that they do and for chatting with me in these episodes. I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. My name is David Juro, and this has been Neighborly Chats on WRGU LP 92.9 FM.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Latif White, Operations Manager from WJYN 98.5 FM Uptown Radio. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.